Shalom Aleichem, Chevra, it's Binyamin Hammer at National Council Young Israel. We are now about to begin with Rebbe conference call number 48. Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you. Question one. A local board of health has informed the community that there is a serious outbreak of rabies in squirrels. They have laid traps and have asked all neighbors to do the following. A. Place all garbage for pickup on the morning of collection. Our pickup is on Tuesdays and Shabbos morning. Can we put the garbage out on Shabbos morning? Holding all garbage for just Tuesday may attract squirrels and be in violation of the Board of Health. B. Purchase a repellent slash poison spray that repels slash poison squirrels and rodents. They want the garbage cans and all garbage bags for disposal sprayed no more than 3 hours before pickup will be effective. Can be sprayed on Shabbos. C. If a squirrel rummages through a garbage can and garbage is strewn on the floor to wear gloves, collect the trash off the street and pour ammonia or bleach on the ground, can any of these be done on Shabbos? Okay, one at a time. A. If one looks and says, Shmira Shabbos Kilchasa, newest edition, Perek Chavez, Sif Mem asterisk, he says that if the bag, or can I guess, has food remnants which are edible, then one may carry the entire bag, notwithstanding the fact that other parts of the contents of the bag are not edible, and therefore, in almost every garbage in America that I know about, there are parts of the bag that have some food which is edible, and therefore there's no problem of moving the garbage bag on Shabbos. In addition, if it smells bad, it's called the Graf Sharei. It's a special dispensation to remove something which has a foul odor that would probably apply in most of these cases as well. B. It's very important to distinguish between a repellent and a poison. A repellent, in effect, is a poison, but if you pour the spray directly on the animal, that's not allowed. That's killing. Killing is not allowed on Shabbos. This is again found in Shmir Shabbos, Perek Chafei Sivov. But you may spray to repel these animals. That is permissible. Question number three. Once again, it's Graf Sharei. It stinks. It's a terrible thing to have all the garbage strewn all over the floor. There's a hetzer to remove it. And there's nothing wrong with pouring ammonia on the floor either to avoid rabies, which is, of course, a health concern. Question two. I've been asked to speak about the status of food products made in dairy equipment. Could items such as ices that have food, that have a good parva hechsher, but are made in dairy equipment, DE, be eaten with fleishiks or after fleishiks? Excellent question. One should not eat it with fleishiks, even though it could be mutter. But after fleishiks is not a problem. There's no need to wait 6 hours. Let's go to some of the details. Number one, in these kinds of circumstances where there's a hechsher, it's being made in a factory. In almost all cases, they purge the pots with boiling water between various processes. And in all likelihood, when they're making the parva ices, there's no dairy taste left whatsoever. You are familiar with the fact that you cannot kosher within 24 hours. That applies to non-kosher. But here, with everything is kosher over here, we're discussing the dairy equipment. It's called hetera bola. So there can be a koshering by the boiling water being poured into the pot, even if it's what's called a ben yomo. And therefore, the likelihood is, can't say for sure, the likelihood is that the dairy equipment is not really dairy by the time the ices are being made in it. Specifically, they usually use soap, which is a davar hapogim, which works even in a surah bola, within the first 24 hours. So probably the pot is not milchiks at all. If it should be happen to be milchiks, worst case scenario, we're talking about what's called not barnat the hetera, which means the taste of the dairy went into the pot, the taste of the pot went into the ices. It's still hetera, it's 100% mutter. There, the Shulchan Aruch is lenient, but for Ashkenaz and the Ramah, is noag lechatchila, not to eat it with meat, but if it got mixed into meat, would be permissible. This is Yerodea Simon Sadihei Sif Beis. If it's an Eina Ben Yomo, we said, which is likelier than some of these cases, or the equivalent, it would be permissible to eat it with meat. In our situation, it's not clear whether you can apply the principle of Stam Kalim Ein B'Nayoma, because in fact it may not apply. On the other hand, there is this so-called equivalent of kashering. So therefore, because of all this, it's not a good idea to have it literally together with meat, even though we could find the heter for it. But to wait for 6 hours is not necessary. The Rama and Siman Pei Tes Sif Gimel does not need to wait. It's calling for the Beis Yosef, the Shachar B'Kivegir Esk. According to the Beis Yosef, you can even have it with meat. Why is he only say you don't have to wait 6 hours? They give various terutim. Either it's a Davar Charif or there's some mamashes there. In any event, it seems to me it's obvious you don't have to wait 6 hours after having these after meat to have these ices, pipshuto. Again, there are those who disagree and they make distinctions between waiting after a not completely fleshed item, where there are leniencies, and waiting for a non-completely milchik item after you wait real fleshik. Some make that distinction, but as I said before, it's probably mutter to even have it with fleshik. It's probably even to have the ices with fleshik, so certainly I don't think there's a need to wait 6 hours after fleshik. Question number three. This is my first year serving as a rabbi in a community. Do I need to give shalach manas to every member of the community between 30 and 40 packages? Another Rav suggests I leave the community for Purim day, let those who drop off for shalach manas do so at my door. Is this proper? What a great question. One fulfills the mitzvah of shalach manas by giving to one person. One. Lirei'ehu. One. It's not appropriate for the rabbi to disappear on Purim. Purim is a day when people want to come to the rabbi's house, usually. I know in my community, we sit a whole day at the table on Purim. People are coming in and out the whole day. They give shalach manas, we give back shalach manas. Don't have to, but we do. Remember, if you prepare 10 shalach manas, you can then do recycling. You know, the first 10 that come in, you give them, and then the next 20 to 30, you give them the recycled stuff from the first 10 that came to you, etc., etc. I think that if it's possible for the Rav or the Rebbe to prepare shalach manas for everybody, you know, to make such a big deal out of it, it's going to be two small manas. You can take a small bottle of wine or grape juice and have a couple of cookies. That's shalach manas. If that's not so hard to do. It doesn't have to be so big. And that would be sufficient. That's the proper way to do shalach manas if you can't do any more as a Rav in the community. Question four. One of my congregants has a son in an out-of-town special at high school and belongs to a drama group in the local JCC. A directly religious man will be renting an antique-looking suit for the boy as part of his costume. The boy is concerned that it may be shatnez, wants to get it checked. The costume rental company says you cannot make any alterations except by their tailors. If you do, you own it. The director says you are only wearing the suit for 2 hours a day for 6 performances over a 2-week period. You don't need to check it since it's only a rental. What is the halacha? Forgive me, the director is incorrect. The fact that it's only a rental does not make it permissible, even though it's a religious man, but that's not correct. Nonetheless, it seems to me that there are a number of things working over here. Number one, according to many authorities, we're talking at most about an Isur Midirabbanan. By Torah law, you need to, it's called Shua Tevi Venuz, Machlokas Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam, what that means. According to most authorities, it would appear probably not shatnez by Torah law, but only by rabbinic law. And the Rav Shlomo Kluger says in a tshuva to Tam Vadas that if it's impossible to check it, which here it's impossible because you're going to ruin it and have to keep it, so we consider that impossible, it's mutter if the worst case scenario is shatnez derabbanan. I understood him to be referring to a case where it's a 50-50 situation. You don't know. In reality, it never reaches 50-50. According to my shot, this checker, it depends what kind of garment we're talking about. A cheap garment, the incidence of shatnez is approximately 2.5%. We call that a miyut she'eino matzui. It's a very, very small percentage. And technically speaking, if you're buying cheap garments, there's not even a need to check for shatnez. I'm not against it, but technically speaking, you can buy it and wear it for 10 years and not check for shatnez if it's a cheap suit. How you define it precisely, I can't give you the exact number. If it's a expensive suit, then it's a mir tamatzi. It could reach 40%. That's what the experts say. And then, of course, if you're buying such a suit, you must check for shatness, for mir tamatzi. In our case, it's hard to know if buying an antique-looking suit, part of a costume, I have no clue if that's from the cheap category or the expensive category. We'll call it a suffik mir tamatzi, suffik mir she'ena matzi, where the psak halacha is sfeika derabanan lekula, and there's no need to check. So I think he can wear it, but not for the reason that the director gave. He's only renting it. He could wear it because he's unable to check it. And you're unable to check it, then there's room to be lenient. In any case, as I said before, but certainly if it's probably a miut she'eno matzi. This is, again, I'm obviously taking into account the rental. Had it been a purchase, we'd say it's always good to check if you can. But since it's a rental, you cannot check it, there's room to be lenient. Question number 5. I have a member that's ready to make up as soon as they sell their home. They have not been able to sell it for 9 months. Their realtor has asked them if she could start bringing clients over on Shabbos. The family will not be in the home when the realtor comes. A, may she bring the clients? Well, my opinion, you're not permitted to tell her to bring the clients on Shabbos. It's Amira Lenachri. But if on her own she brings clients, there's no need to protest because she's doing it on her own. You never told her to do it. And there's no mekach u'memcha, nothing is changing hands. It's just looking, kind of a window shopping, which is not in and of itself such a terrible violation. There is a possible maris ayin shaila that people will not realize that you didn't tell the realtor to bring the person in on Shabbos. That's an issue which has to be judged on a case-by-case basis. It's possible you should try to arrange that this visit be done at a time when people aren't around, whatever that means. And if someone asks you about it, how'd you let this happen, you explain to them, I didn't tell her to come on Shabbos, which is a sufficient explanation, if you ask me, in this case. B, is the fact that this is an impediment to Aliyah be more of a reason for a leniency? Interestingly, the Gemara says in Masechta Gittin Daf Ches Amud Beis that you're allowed to tell the guy to sign a document to buy land in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos. Tosis points out, they think it's an exception to the rule. Usually it's not allowed against the Baal HaIter. But Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah rabbah. And as such, it's permissible to tell a goy, even to do a daraisa on Shabbos. Wow. Here is no daraisa. And if his aliyah is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, it's a mitzvah rabbah. So it seems to me that moving to Eretz Yisrael is the equivalent of buying land in Eretz Yisrael. It's a mitzvah rabbah. My pshat mitzvah rabbah is a long-term mitzvah that affects our long-standing as opposed to shaking a lulav. And once you buy land in Eretz Yisrael, once you move to Eretz Yisrael, it can last for generations, this mitzvah. And therefore, I think it would be permissible perhaps even to tell a guy to do a daraisa. I'm not saying you should do it in this case because it's not directly the aliyah. It's the background to the aliyah. But going on aliyah certainly is an important consideration in this direct context. Does it matter if the realtor was Jewish? Yes. If the realtor was Jewish, you should not let her come. Even if you can find some kind of a flimsy heter, it's not right that you should tell a Jewish realtor that she may come into your house on Shabbos to show the house around. 6. I will bezes Hashem in Masadik Yidushin for a boy in my shul marrying a girl whose parents are divorced. The boy's parents are married and want to walk their son down to the chuppah. The girl's parents have requested the father's walk down the boy and the mother's the girl. The boy's parents said no. I do not believe I will be successful in convincing my congregants to change their mind. It may hurt our relationship if I were to pursue it. The girl's parents do not want to walk down together. Her father's remarried and her mother does not want to. I wish I could stay out of it, but it's affecting the chosn kala. What should I do? Tell the members of Yeshul that the first rule of Mechutanim is do what they want. At the end of the day, if you do what the Mechutanim want, it's good for you, it's good for them, and most importantly, it's good for your children. I would advise them, you can't tell them what to do, I would advise them strongly to do what the Mechutanim want. I understand that they're coming from a part of society where it's typical that the parents walk down, not fathers for the boy and mothers for the girl. There are significant parts of Klal Yisrael. I would say that by now, it's probably true that the majority of Klal Yisrael, of Shomer Mitzvahs, that the fathers are marching down the boy and the mothers the girl, because that's a Hasidic meeting, and the Hasidim are now probably a majority of Shomer Torah Mitzvahs in our part of the world. And therefore, even though they come from a different part of the world, if that's what the other Mechotana want, they have good reason to want in this case, I would advise them. You can't force them. Advise them. That's a smart thing to do. It's just smarter for them. It's certainly smarter for their son, and that they're trying to, on the end of it, for themselves or for their son. For their son, it's certainly smarter. So you put aside your own desires and help out your son. Yes, it's because of the Mechotanim, but if the Mechotanim are happy, your son will be happy. If the Mechotanim are angry, they're going to take it out on your children, your son and daughter-in-law. It's not going to be good for them. The story is told about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's how they asked him, how come half your children, you march down, men for the chosen and ladies for the kala, and the other half differently. So yeah, they gave a very simple answer. I did whatever the other side wanted, which is a great answer from a great man. Question 7. Our shul seats about 40 men and 20 women. We have no social role. A well-off man in our shul will be making an offer for his son in a few weeks and is asking/insisting for that Shabbos, we move the morning minyan to his backyard. He will put up a large waterproof tent so that all his guests will be accommodated. He says he will invite the entire shul to daven/kiddush with him, and I believe he will. Is it appropriate to shut down a minyan for such an occasion? If we set up for two minyanim, where should I daven? It's never appropriate to shut down a minyan. It may be appropriate in some cases to move a minyan. Sometimes a building is under construction, or some shuls that can't have two minyanim and there's a base oval, they will move the minyan during the week to the oval's house. Not ideal. You put up a sign for this week, Shachris and Mincha will be at this and this address. Yeah, the people who come to the shul will be able to find that address and come right away, hopefully in time. If you're going to give in to what this well-off man wants, you're not going to say you're closing down the minyan. No, that's a very bad way to say it. You don't shut down any minyan. We're moving the minyan to the different address for this week. Presumably people will be notified in advance. And if a stray man comes to the shul not knowing it, it'll be a big sign. Please, the minyan is this Shabbos is in this and this location. So remember, it's not shutting down. It's moving. In my view, can only do this if every member of the shul will go along. Once it's a member of the shul who says absolutely not, and certainly if there are 10 men who say absolutely not, forget about it. You can't move people out of their comfort zone, even if a, quote, well-off man is asking/insisting that you move them in. You can't do that, because no matter who the man is, unless the man will convince the other people who are resisting, how will they convince him? Shalom, that I'll have, you'll never get such good shalom in your life. Whatever, however he wants to convince them, that's what should be done. If you can't convince them all, then you have to have no choice but two minyanim. Hopefully there'll be at least 10 men who will stay in the shul. Otherwise, yeah, if there's going to be two minyanim, you have to make sure out of the 40 men that at least 10 will be in each location. If that's the case, where should the rabbi daven? That's a no-brainer. The rabbi has to daven in the shul. If there's a minyan in the shul, the rabbi has to be in his shul. However, what should be done is that the rabbi should arrange that the minyanim be staggered. Presumably, the regular shul minyan will start at its regular time, which hopefully is early enough, so that the house minyan can start later, so that the rabbi should be able to daven in his shul minyan. And as soon as the minyan is over, instead of tarrying, he'll walk over to the house minyan, and he'll be able to give a drasha in honor of the chosen, in honor of the ofruf, and he'll be able to participate in the kiddush and circulate. And hopefully, many of the people who insisted on davening in shul will walk over with him so that the man will be happy and the shul will be happy. And shalom al Yisrael. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebbe. Hopefully we can call upon you in a few weeks.
Okay.
Speak to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.